your Queen's Gales and the hated Western Mustangs.
This is electric. This is unprecedented. This is Queen's football on CFRC.
Visit the Screening Room, Kingston's only independent movie theater located downtown at 120 Princess Street. They specialize in playing art house, international classic, and cult cinema, along with Hollywood's best new releases. People also always say they have the best popcorn in town. Visit Screening Room at screeningroom.com for upcoming show dates and ticket information.
Good evening, football fans, and I hope you'll pardon the 8 p.m. hour intrusion. This is not Nishan Tung with Salt Licked in Rapture. No, rather, this is Jesse Bell, the voice of Gales Game Day on CFRC 101.9 FM, here with a very special half-hour season preview brought to you, much like our Gales Game Day on-site football coverage, by our title sponsor, the Grad Club. We're talking all things Queens football tonight. We're going to start with a quick history lesson related to their long and bitter rivalry with the Western Mustangs. We're going to go unit by unit, projecting how the team should shake out, and then we're going to look at their overall schedule, and I'm going to make some predictions that'll either make me look really dumb or really smart. It's a coin flip at this point. Let's kick things off by discussing the most bitter, lucrative, and important rivalry in Canadian football. Queens and Western. We begin at the end of the Roaring Twenties, October 19th, 1929, to be exact. The Gales and the Mustangs clashed for the first time at the original Richardson Stadium on Queen's University main campus. At the time, the first iteration of Richardson had just celebrated its 8th birthday. The American stock market was just under a week away from experiencing a major crash that would lead to the Great Depression, and the Western Mustangs were in the middle of their first season playing organized football. Amidst the backdrop of growing unrest and chaos in North America, the Gales prevailed 25-2. These teams would rematch a short time later with the Gales winning 14-0. That 1929 team would actually end the season by clinching the program's 8th Yates Cup victory with a win over another longtime rival, the University of Toronto Varsity Blues, at home by a score of 15-5. The 1920s marked the first real golden era for the Gales, with a Grey Cup three-peat and some Yates Cup victories sprinkled throughout the decade as well. Credit to Western, they were quick learners, as the 1930s marked a rapid ascension to powerhouse status for the Mustangs. They clinched their first Yates Cup in 1931 and closed out the decade with a victory in 1939. That 39 Yates Cup was the last one awarded for 7 years, as the Second World War necessitated a pause in all university football activities. When the league resumed in 1946, the Mustangs captured 4 of the next 5 provincial titles. Western's post-war surge continued into the 1950s as they took home 4 Yates Cups across the decade. Queens was building something special down in Kingston, however, and the Silver 60s would become the most dominant period in program history as the Gales took home 5 Yates Cup victories and the 1968 Vanier Cup. Now, despite the fact that both Queens and Western were some of the best teams in Canada for the better part of the last 3 decades, they had never met in a Yates Cup final, due partially to how the Yates Cup was awarded. That all changed in 1979 when the higher-ranked Mustangs beat the then-defending Vanier Cup champion Gales 32-14 to kick off a Yates Cup four-peat. Now, this rivalry would cool slightly in the 1980s as conference realignment separated the two teams. This period of relative detente ended in 2001, however, as Queens re-entered the OUA fold. The two programs met in the 2002 playoffs, where the Gaels prevailed 55-20 thanks to an outstanding performance from Tommy Dennison. The teams traded wins throughout the 2000s. Western would eliminate the Gaels in the 2007 playoffs at home, but Queens stormed back in 2008 to crush the Mustangs during homecoming. Then we reach 2009. 30 years after these teams met in the Yates Cup final for the first time, we had an absolute classic where the Gaels would prevail in what many, myself included, feel is the most cathartic Yates Cup win in program history. Now it's at this point in the rivalry that Western begins to pull away, thanks in large part to top-notch recruiting and outstanding coaching from Greg Marshall. At the time of publication, Queen's last win against the Mustangs was September 15th, 2012. It's been 13 agonizing years of close calls and blowouts. The closest Queen's has come to unseating the Mustangs? September 16th, 2023. A game made infamous by two words.
Tillich draws back the pass. He's airing it out. It's going to be long. No! No!
That 2023 game was the last home meeting between the Gaels and the Mustangs prior to today's game. Can Queens finally snap this 14-game losing streak and score a desperately needed home victory? Or will Western run wild once more? There's only one way to find out, and there's only one place to catch all the action. Tune in to CFRC 101.9 FM or CFRC.ca tomorrow afternoon at 2:45 p.m. for the Grad Club pregame show, ahead of the 3 p.m. scheduled kickoff for what should be another instant classic. Okay, we've talked the past. Let's talk the present and future for this Gaels team. Let's start our team breakdown on the defensive side of the ball, because this is the unit that will have the most questions to answer in 2025. And I say that because although there are some pretty key returners for this defense, we'll get into them in a moment, this Queens unit has lost a lot of really valuable players, especially up front. The Gaels graduated multiple veteran guys on the defensive line, including Andrew Mullins-Grant, Van Wishart, Silas Hubert, and Darian Newell. Now, they will have some familiar names on the defensive line coming back. Guys like Ollie Jackson, Stephen Capea, and perhaps most crucially, big number 91, Eric Johnston, who helped shore up what would have been an otherwise pretty young and untested defensive interior. Look for guys like Tristan Burrell and Garang Ugwak to make key contributions, but the success of this Queens defensive line will hinge on those three veteran names, Ollie Jackson, Stephen Capea, and Eric Johnston. Let's move back a couple yards and talk about the linebacking core, because this projects to be a very talented and athletically gifted unit. They're going to be led by all-Canadian inside linebacker number 44, Justin Pace, who is coming off a record-setting 2024, including the playoffs. So we're talking all games played. He had 89 total tackles, 2.5 sacks, 2 forced fumbles, and 2 interceptions. And these were not empty calorie stats either. He sealed 2 games late with generated turnovers, Mack in the home opener and Guelph in the penultimate home game last season. Two major, major wins that simply would not have happened without the contributions of Justin Pace. This is the exact kind of guy you want leading your team. Someone who sets the standard with words and deeds. He's going to be joined by his friend and backer battery mate, number 46, Jeremy Hiscox. He's a smart, technical player with good pop in his pads. But the most intriguing new addition to this Queens defense is actually that of second year, first year eligibility, linebacker number 30, Jacob Baldwin. And he could have a huge year for the tricolor. He's young, absolutely, but he plays with a natural fluidity that few possess at his age. He's an incredible athlete, he's smooth, and from what I've seen in training camp, he's got some really fantastic football sense. He could very well be primed for like an early Justin Pace season, because before Justin Pace broke out and became the best defensive player in Canada last year, he had a couple years where he was really showing those flashes of brilliance with how hard he'd hit. He'd always have his nose where the ball was. He'd be in the middle of every single play, and I think that's what we will see from Jacob Baldwin this year. Beyond Baldwin, Pace, and Hiscox, we've got a lot of veteran guys that I think are looking to make an impact. Guys like number 49, Jalen Grable, who was a special team stud last year, DJ Ryan, Alex Tuck, two other guys that I think played very well and could possibly get more defensive reps, and somebody who I saw during training camp that really impressed me was James Gillingham. Not just the long snapper, a talented linebacker who laid some pretty devastating hits. I think James Gillingham could be in the mix for this linebacking core in 2025. The secondary is, without question, the most experienced unit on this Queens defense. We have got 3 sixth-year players back. Number 26, Keegan Vanek. Number 14, Jared Seaway. And unbelievably, number 24, Ashton Miller-Melanson. This unit has so much continuity. These guys have played together for years, and they've played top-tier football at that. In addition to these three, you've got number 22, John Korskaden, back. He was second on the team in total tackles last season, and he looked like a fantastic fill-in for graduated veteran safety Eric Colonna. And you know what? Korskaden does remind me of Coach Colonna in so many ways. Just such a cerebral, technical, fundamentally sound player. I've also heard a lot of good things about Osa Osaseri and Andy Quinn, but I think the possible breakout candidate for this Queens defensive back room is number 6, Ian St. Arnaud, who I think will be the 4th starting defensive back for the Gaels. He looked good in training camp, and he's just such a dangerous player to have on the defensive side of the ball. We know what he can do on special teams. He's had a tremendous run on special teams. If he gets the ball in his hands on defense, we could be talking pick sixes every single game. This guy is going to give quarterbacks fits. They better stay away from Ian St. Arnaud, because we could see number 6 taking it back for 6 in a very different capacity. On the note of special teams, let's talk about how this Gaels special teams unit looks for 2025. Simply put, in 2024, I thought this was the best special teams unit in the country. And now that we've got an extra year of seasoning and a couple very special recruits joining the unit, it could be another remarkable year for Coach Taggart's special teams squad. Let's talk about punting. Matt Driver is back. He's no longer number 34. He's switched it to number 17. This kid is 6'5". He's a former varsity soccer player, and he gets better with each and every single rep. He had never played organized football prior to joining the team at the early part of 2023. He played his first reps in 2024, and he became one of the most explosive and electrifying punters in Canada. He had a 71-yard punt against the Windsor Lancers. Every single time he steps on the field, the crowd gasps. I am so excited to see what Matt Driver does in 2025. The other two kicking prospects, kicking players for this special teams unit. One is a name that you know, number 42, Tyler Mullen, rapidly becoming among the most reliable kickers in Canada. He was outstanding in the playoffs last year. He went 7-for-7 in the playoffs last year. He was perfect on all the kicks they needed him for, including a career-long 49-yarder against the Laurier Golden Hawks. He was fantastic. He was arguably one of the 3 best players on the team during their playoff run, and he looks primed for a big 2025. I really do believe that if he keeps developing how he has over the last couple years, Mullen could be the very best kicker in Canada at the end of the 2025 season. However, he is no longer the solo kicking option for the Gaels, as Queens has brought in probably one of the 2 or 3 best kicking prospects in North America, in Mark Cappuccitti Gutierrez, known lovingly as Mark Cappuccino by his teammates. This guy was absolutely lethal in training camp. He was making kicks from distances of 53, 57 and 61. Mind you, it was off a tee, but he still flashes some truly unbelievable leg power for such a young player. I don't know if this is the year that he'll get any real in-game reps because Tyler Mullen is such a reliable presence in front of him, but it's very reassuring to me to know that Queens has an absolute unit of a kicker behind them with Mark Capuchiti Gutierrez, someone who could not just break the program field goal distance record of 52 yards, but if his training camp performance is to be believed, shatter it by nearly 10 yards. This kid is unbelievable. I don't know if we'll see him this year, but we're certainly going to see him in the future, and the future looks very bright. All right, let's talk the offense. Everybody wants to know how this offense projects. Let's start with the foundation of any great offensive unit, the Queens offensive line, and we are going to see more continuity with this O-line than years past. There are two key veteran players coming back for the Gaels. Number 71, Nick Henning, and number 74, Jazz Kara. Both are super seniors, both are projected to start at the outside tackle positions, and in regards to Nick Henning especially, this guy has got the potential to be a top tackle in Ontario and an all-Canadian caliber player. They're also joined by a couple familiar names in the middle, Logan Thiessen and Daniel Sudak, and we've got young Riley Sherman, second-year player, making his first real contribution as a Queens Gael in big-time games. He should be the starting center, number 67. The kid is a real football guy. He's got a great head on his shoulders, and he is built like a brick you-know-what house. This guy should be very good for the Gaels, and this is a deep unit overall with a lot of versatile pieces. Let's talk running backs. Number 29, Jared Kasari, is back for one final shot at glory with the Gaels. He comes into this season after a strong 2024 where he put up nearly 800 yards on the ground. He is currently in sixth place on the program's all-time rushing list with 2,248 regular season yards. Another 800-yard season would make Kasari just the fourth player in program history to crack the 3,000-yard threshold. He is far from the only familiar name for Queens football fans. Behind him, we've got a pair of second years in Ethan Dahl and Jaden Gersey McDonald, both of whom scored their first career touchdowns last season. And then you've got some more experienced guys, upperclassmen like number zero, which sweet number for the record, Isaiah Adams, and perhaps most intriguing of all, number 34, Jaden Blackman, who I thought put in an outstanding training camp performance and looks like he might be the primary change of pace option behind Kasari. Don't be surprised if you see Jaden Blackman get a lot of meaningful reps in 2025, and man, this guy has been waiting for this opportunity. He's had some bad injury luck, but when he's on the field, he is so explosive and so difficult to deal with. Let's talk about a very underrated aspect of this Queens offense, their H-backs. Queens prides itself as being HBU, or H-back University. They really take pride in this position, and they've had some fantastic players there in years past. Last year, we saw an incredible season from Mateo Tuioti. Now, admittedly, the training camp practices I saw, I didn't see a lot of Tuioti. I'm not sure if it's an injury thing or what, but I did see a lot of another experienced, integral offensive veteran, number 88, Liam Silverson, who looked fantastic. He looked so sharp as both a pass catcher and blocker playing H-back for the Gaels. We've also got names like Yannick Daigue, James Preston, and Cale Warren back. So this should be a unit with a lot of experience and a lot of potential in 2025. I think the greatest strength of this team is its options outside the tackle box. This is an absolutely loaded receiver and slot back room, led by number 16, Nathan Falcone, who had 500 yards and 7 receiving touchdowns in 2024. He looks primed to have a huge 2025. He's joined by number 8, Matt Camillo, arguably the best big play threat on the team. Number 18, Jack Ashby Jacobs, who, when healthy, is a devastating option at wide receiver. You've got number 13, Logan Walton, who had an outstanding rookie year, including a remarkable playoff game-winning catch against the Windsor Lancers. The greatest catch nobody saw. You've got Cedric Smith back. Cedric Smith only played one game last season, but he is such an explosive option in the slot.
And I simply have to say this. I think the Gale on offense that could be primed for the biggest breakout year of all is number two, Russell Weir. And that's because he has so much offensive versatility, so much speed, and has looked so locked in during training camp. He is somebody that has been a vocal leader for this team. He is somebody who has done everything asked of him with no complaints, and he just looks like he could have a huge year for the tricolor. Keep your eyes on number two, Russell Weir. Folks, there are other names that I didn't even mention. This unit is so loaded. Look for contributions from guys like Nathan Bulma, Ben Falkowski. There are so many names to cover with receiver and slot back. It could be a really fun year. Let's finish things out, of course, with quarterback. This is a big money position, and the Gales have two great primary options. Number 7, Anthony Leo, and number 12, Alex Vraken. Let's talk about Anthony Leo first. Now, Leo, shorter, shiftier option. He is a great deep ball threat, but in years past, some of his short to intermediate throws were not as precise and polished as they needed to be. That looks like it's changed. Training camp, he looked like he was locked in. He also had a fantastic season, throwing 7 touchdowns versus 2 total turnovers. He was great in 2024, and I'm not sure if he'll be the starting option. I'm not sure if he's quarterback two. We're going to find that out tomorrow. But I don't really consider it like a quarterback one, quarterback two situation, because both Leo and Vraken are just so fantastic. You really are spoiled for choice. Speaking of Alex Vraken, he is the more experienced of the two options. He has really those kind of prototypical physical tools you look for in a quarterback. He's tall, he's rangy, he's athletic, and man, can he zip that ball out there. He has looked so dialed in all offseason and all training camp. There is a noticeable chip on his shoulder, and at the time of publication, Vraken sits just outside of the top 10 for program passing records. A good season in 2025 could see him catapult possibly up into 9th or 8th place. You know, who's to say what will happen? And the big concern with Vraken in the past has been injury issues. He's yet to play a full season for the tricolor, but you know me, I'm rooting for the health of all players, not just on Queens, but across the league. It would be really cool, though, if we could see Kingston's own Alex Vraken have a healthy, productive, and possibly very fun 2025 season.
Located in the heart of the Queen's University campus, the Grad Club is a premier destination for concerts, events, and private gatherings in the city of Kingston. The Grad Club and its staff pride themselves on creating a safe, inclusive space for all. Interested in booking your next event, function, or study group? Head to thegradclub.ca for more information. Okay, we're back. This is your Gales Game Day season preview on CFRC 101.9 FM, brought to you by the Grad Club. And let's get into it. Let's go game by game and offer a prediction of what this Queens team could do in 2025. Week 1, Queens versus Western, 3 p.m. at Richardson Stadium. 102nd clash between these two great programs, nearly 100 years of history. The teams match up well on paper. Veteran quarterbacks and running backs, quick, shifty wide receivers, just deep offensive units. I think Queens has the edge on special teams in terms of punting and kicking, and it's pretty much even in terms of punt and kick return. Defensively, Western may be a little stronger this year, but it's very close. Look, Western's the ultimate front runner. They're going to jump on you early, try and just put as much pressure on you to keep up as possible. In the past, the Queen's offense has struggled to crack a seemingly impenetrable Western defense, but I don't think that will be the problem this year. It's going to be up to the Queen's defense to try and limit this explosive offense. Ultimately, I think this is going to be a one-score game, one way or the other, and I just feel like with Richardson Stadium, with the momentum the team has after that heroic performance against Laurier in the playoffs last year, I think Queens is going to be able to sneak past with a 38-32 victory. That's my prediction. Week 2, McMaster, harder to predict just simply because McMaster's best player, Keegan Hall, transferred to York. They've still got some continuity on offense with, like,
for instance, their great wide receivers, especially Jackson Cooling, and an underrated defense, but I don't think McMaster is far enough along this year to beat the Gale. So I have Queens winning in week two. That's August 30th, 1 p.m. kickoff. I think the Gales will beat the Marauders on the road. Now we come to perhaps the other most intriguing game on the schedule, Friday Night Lights. Friday, September 5th, 6:30 p.m. kickoff. Queens hosting the defending Yates Cup champions and the national finalists, the Laurier Golden Hawks. And Laurier, they've got all of their wide receivers back. They have an incredible wide receiver unit led by Ethan Jordan, who put up 1,000 yards last year. He's back. Raiden Thorne is back. Laomi Ajutaleo is back. But Taylor Elgersma, at the time of publication, is still slugging it out in the NFL. So they're going to have, it looks like, Ohio transfer Callum Withers at quarterback. And I know you hear NCAA, you immediately assume this guy is elite. That hasn't always been the case. It is sometimes a difficult adjustment. I remember 2 years ago, Guelph had, I think, two NCAA transfers playing quarterback, and neither of them were able to figure out the game. It's a different style, Canadian football, versus what you grow up on in the States. So that could be a factor. I think Queens is going to win this game, but I think it's going to be a prime time shootout under the lights at Richardson Stadium. We move on to week four. Queens against the University of Toronto Varsity Blues, 4 p.m. Saturday, September 13th. Another chapter in an extremely long rivalry between your Queens Gales and the Toronto Varsity Blues, one of their original rivals. And I love Toronto. I love their stadium. The event staff do an A1 job, but I would be surprised if the Blues are able to hang with the Gales this year. It's actually been almost 50 years since Toronto last defeated the Gales. That was October 1975. I don't have that changing this year, but credit to the Varsity Blues. Historically speaking, this is a program that has scored big upsets over nationally ranked opponents in the past. Think of the number two ranked Ottawa GGs losing to Toronto, and I want to say either 2010 or 2011. So never say never, but I think Queens will prevail. Moving us on to week five at Waterloo. That is Saturday, September 20th, 1 p.m. Gales get the victory. I don't feel too conflicted saying that. We move on to Saturday, September 27th. This should be an awesome game. Queens hosting York. 3 p.m. York, the most improved team in the country. They've got Keegan Hall, an all-conference quarterback for the first time, and goodness, who knows how long. This should be a really fun matchup. I don't think York is quite there yet, so I think Queens will win, but York should put up one heck of a fight. We move on to another marquee matchup, week 7. This is Queens at Guelph for their homecoming on October 4th at 1 p.m. Every 10 years, Guelph becomes like the best team in the country. 2005, 2015, 2025. So this could be a really difficult game for the Gales. I do have Guelph sneaking past, thanks in large part to the home crowd atmosphere. So I do have Queens falling to 6-1 in a narrow loss to the Griffins, but that could easily change. We'll see. It's a long ways away, but that's what my gut tells me. Then we have Queens and Windsor homecoming October 18th, 1 p.m. Rematch of a brutal OUA quarterfinal game that the Gales won in thrilling fashion. I think Queens prevails over Windsor. Windsor has a great defense and tend to struggle offensively. I don't think they're going to have the horses to run with the Gales in this game. I think Queens, I think they'll finish atop the OUA by virtue of that week one win against Western. And I do have a rematch. Not just of the week one opener, but of the 2021 Yates Cup. So back on home turf for the Gales. That to me is the only way that this Yates Cup drought can end, is with a victory over the Western Mustangs. It has to be that way. You must exercise those demons, not just in the regular season, but in the postseason as well. And that's it, folks. Those are my predictions. That is what I believe will happen for this Queens team in the 2025 season. Once again, we are a long ways away from, for instance, the Yates Cup, but that's my quick little rundown. I hope you've enjoyed, and I hope you will join me tomorrow, because we have got the marquee matchup on the schedule. Queens hosting Western for the first time since 2023's infamous no game. They've played in Western since, but this is the first home rematch since September 16th, 2023. And my goodness, am I excited, and I hope you are too. Join us tomorrow at 2:45 p.m. for the Grad Club pregame show, ahead of the scheduled 3 p.m. kickoff. Whew. It's going to be good. Okay, folks, stay tuned. We've got that 90-minute episode of Different Circles coming up in less than a minute's time. Until tomorrow, I wish you all nothing but the best.
Did you know that the Grad Club also offers outstanding catering options for your events? They offer a wide variety of meal options, including plenty of vegetarian and vegan alternatives. More information about their new catering menu can be found at thegradclub.ca.
Awesome Kingston is Kingston's micro-grant organization. We've given away over $125,000 in micro-grants over our 12 years. We meet 10 times a year to hear pitches from our community, and every time, we give one person or group $1,000 cash, no strings attached, to help fund their dreams. If you have an idea that might make Kingston more awesome, consider a pitch to Awesome Kingston to win one of our $1,000 no strings attached micro grants. You can pitch at awesomekingston.org. Proposals are due the first Sunday of every month, and selected pitches are heard the third Thursday of every month. Once again, pitch your awesome ideas at awesomekingston.org.
You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM.
Children growing, women producing, men go working, some do stealing. Everyone's got to make a living.
man is fat, a child. That miner doesn't know the facts. That's life. Oh yeah. That's life.
So you can see
that life ain't just not what it's worth.
Thank you. mama, you understand that? Well, like, I don't understand how you can, cause, like, I've been to, you know, Paris, Beirut, you know, I've been to Iraq, Iran, Eurasia, you know, I speak very, very, fluent Spanish, todo está bien chévere, you understand that?
Bien chévere.
Chévere.
Bien chévere.
Is that right, mama? Yeah, cause I got my shaking room on the little thing.
Everybody's got a thing, but some don't know how to handle it. Always reaching out in vain, just taking the things not worth having. But don't you worry about a thing. Don't you worry about a thing, mama. Cause I'll be standing on the side when you check it out. Don't you worry about a thing. Don't you worry about a thing, mama. Cause I'll be standing on the side when you check it out. Check it out. When you get off your trip, don't you worry.
the Tet Center for Creativity and Learning, a vibrant arts hub at 370 King Street West in Kingston, right beside the Isabel Bader Center. Enjoy a coffee at Juniper Cafe and explore three floors of galleries, studios, and arts organizations. Borrow instruments from Joe's Mill, sign up for art classes with groups like the Kingston's Potters Guild, and dance with Kingston School of Dance. Join Tet Tuesday Open Studios the second Tuesday of every month to connect with fellow creatives. Students, you can host events at the Tet with reduced rental rates. Learn more at tetcenter.org and follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Tet Center. Your artistic journey begins here.
Good evening, guys, gals, and my non-binary pals. This is Dina, and you're listening to Different Circles. We opened up today's show with 20th Century Steel Band, Heaven and Hell is on Earth, off of their 1975 album, Warm Heart, Cold Steel. 20th Century Steel Band was a nine-piece group from Trinidad formed in the UK. Moving to Britain in 1971, they found fame after coming second in TV talent show New Faces in 1975, and the song was also sampled in Jenny from the Block, released by Jennifer Lopez. Next up, we heard Chaka Khan, Like Sugar, and that's off the 2019 album Hello Happiness. Chaka Khan is known as the Queen of Funk. Her career has spanned more than five decades, beginning in early 1970s as the lead vocalist of the funk band Rufus. With them, she recorded notable hits like Tell Me Something Good, Sweet Thing, Do You Love What You Feel, and the platinum-certified Ain't Nobody. Her debut album featured the number one R&B hit, I'm Every Woman, which became a pop hit for Whitney Houston later. And last up in that set was Stevie Wonder with Don't You Worry About a Thing. It was released as the third single from his 16th studio album, Inner Visions, released in 1973. Inner Visions also included hits Higher Ground and Living for the City. Next up, we're going to switch it up. That's what we do on Different Circles. We're going to start off with some surf, and then we're going to go into post-punk and punk and all the things adjacent, so stay tuned. I'll tell you more about those when we get back.
6 on DVD.
Can you hear those people behind me looking at your feet?